Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Answers Network will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your loved ones. We will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guest, I want you to know that I am grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions. Because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network. and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote, although not from the journal, it's one that I believe that many of us can benefit from. And I believe that right now, people have asked me, what do we have a shortage of today? Well, I believe we have a shortage of leaders. So before you are a leader, success is all about growing yourself. And when you become a leader, success is all about growing others. And that is by Jack Welch. So let's start with those thoughts and hope that we can be growing many leaders out there. Now, 15 years ago, our guest was one of Hollywood's brightest rising stars. He was young, talented, and hardworking. Unfortunately, personal issues surrounding drug use kept him from reaching his full potential. Now, he discusses these issues and his very personal story in his new book, Short Stories, The Autobiography of Christopher Short. Columbus Short. What was I thinking? Okay.
Columbus.
Anyway, Columbus is a film and television actor, producer, singer-songwriter, who is best known for his roles in ABC's highest-rated TV drama, Scandal, and the movie Stomp the Yard, which was number one at the box office for 2 weeks in a row. Now, Columbus won Best Supporting Actor at the NAACP Awards and was also nominated for the Outstanding Actor in a Motion Picture, which was won by Denzel Washington. So, you know, you got to figure there was some tough competition. So Columbus choreographed and was the creative director of Britney Spears' Onyx Hotel tour when he was 20 years old. In 2005, he founded a film and television production company, Great Picture Show Productions, which was developed from his passion for writing and producing. The company executive produced Stomp the Yard 2, Homecoming, Strange Fruit, and the TV1 original movie, Mr. Right. Columbus, welcome to Answers Network.
How you doing? Thanks for having me.
Hey, it is my pleasure. You know, I had a chance to go through the book, and I love the fact that you're really being authentic and you're really being vulnerable. And I think that's another thing that we're missing a lot, and especially in men, is not really showing our vulnerabilities. And I think it's something that you touch on in the book that I think a lot of, and especially young people, can learn from, is that we're all going to make mistakes. I think what sets us apart is how do you bounce back from it?
Yeah.
So So share a little bit about that. And then what then prompted you to feel that while you're working on yourself to make these changes, that it can be, benefit others to write a book?
So the first question first. It doesn't matter what you go through in life. Stories are relative. A lot of people don't share, right? Unless you're in a group setting or a safe environment. And if people did share more, they'd find a lot of commonalities in their struggles, in their trials and their tribulations. Like, wow, you would have no idea. Your coworker or your friend at school is going through some of the things they're going through because they don't talk about it, right? If they shared, you'd find that commonality and you realize, wow, I'm not alone out here. And, you know, people go through things and they go through them alone. And then they see that there's no way out, right? Or they hit a rock bottom and they're like, well, this is it. It's all over, you know, no matter what age they're at. That's never the case. And I'm a living testimony to that. Even speaking to the fact of people that are, you know, have been in prison or in the prison system since juveniles, right? The recidivism rate is crazy. And, you know, because they feel like this is their life, right? I get out, I go right back into the same environment, right back into the same things, right back into the same toxicity that takes me right back to where I didn't want to be. You know, that's my main message just from a personal standpoint of taking control, taking ownership of your own life, right? We have all been victims of our childhood. When you're a child, you have no control over who your parents are, what your parents go through, who your family members are, what they do, where you live, how you eat, how you sleep. You know, you don't have any control over that, those things. But at a point when you do have control, there's got to be an ownership of this is my life and I have to take control of it. So, you know, I went through a crazy time. You know, I've always been wildly focused on my craft, focused on what it is I wanted to do. I was one of the fortunate people to know early what I wanted to do at a very young age. I think I was probably 5 or 6 and I went to Universal Studios and did this Universal Studio tour. And was like, oh my God, this is how they make movies. I want to make movies. Mm-hmm. And at that time, I think Back to the Future 2 was like my favorite movie ever. And I was just from that moment on, I was like, I want to make movies. And I did that. You know, put in that work, put in those hours, young, and in drama school, and you know, it was just tireless work. And to get to a place of success was. You know, you didn't even realize it. I was just there. You know, all that work, you're just in it and it's high powered and you're moving fast. And I had spent all those years perfecting my craft, but not perfecting my life skills. You know, I kind of blew past those things, right? Like the foundational stuff, the important stuff. And, you know, that's where it started. Those are where the things started to rear their ugly heads. And I can, you know, be the first to admit, you know, I wasn't equipped to deal with being in a toxic, you know, I was so comfortable. There's another thing I write about in the book, my comfortability with toxicity, right? I'm sure a lot of people can attest to if all you know is toxicity, you don't know what the other side is. So you don't know what normalcy is, right? So toxicity becomes normal. Mm-hmm. And until it becomes fever pitch, reaches a fever pitch, right? So I wasn't, you know, the height of my career, Scandal's number one. It's like, you know, I'm spending more time on the show Scandal than I am at home. And home life is a mess. My marriage is a mess. And I didn't know how to deal with that. It was stressing me out, but I didn't have time to stress out. I didn't have time to deal with it. I was still, you know, my obligation was, you know, do this, deliver on this show. It's the number one television show. You can't drop the ball. And I could do that at a clip for a long time, but until, you know, I started leaking and my anxiety levels were through the roof and I was using alcohol and drugs to handle that. And, you know, it worked for a bit and then it just got dark, right? Just gets dark. And then I got in trouble with the law. I mean, I was fighting guys, and then, you know, I got into a situation where my ex-wife made allegations that were completely false because I wanted out of the toxicity. And that's where some people might not understand or understand is when you want to get out of the toxicity, you are also someone's codependent on you. Are you codependent on someone? Right. They don't want to break that tie. Yeah. And in breaking that tie, that upsets them, right? That scares them, right? Or whatever the word I'm looking for. Maybe it's like graveyard love. If I can't be with you, then you can't be with anybody else. Mm-hmm. We've seen a lot in kind of murders of passion and those kind of things if you watch those shows. And my attempt to get out of that situation, she made an attempt to
hold on.
Yeah, to hold on or to, you know, you're not going to get away without me ruining your name. You're not going to have this illustrious career without me, right? And in my arrogance, I was like, I don't have to answer to this. I don't have to answer to these allegations. I don't have to deal with that because it's not true. And maybe it's like, you know, the bank's too big to fail. Like, it was like, nah, but absolutely not. You know, the headlines kept coming. And my job was very, you know, ABC was very much aware of the toxic situation. They gave no credence to the allegations. However, the allegations made the network look bad.
Right.
And it was like at a point where it just got too much, where it's like, okay, Columbus, we're going to have to go a different direction. And that was like devastating because I wanted to leave on my own terms, right? You know, that's my team. That's the family. You want to leave, you know, with a party and flowers and a retirement ring, right? Like, you don't want to leave in the middle of something great. And so really, you know, that was hurt. And then, you know, the dealing with court, I never really dealt with the court system. So I, you know, it's a doozy, man. You got to respect the court system. Really. Like, that's a big no. Show up to court, yep. Deal with your stuff. Like, can't avoid it. Like, cause the court will look at you and think, oh, this guy doesn't care. This guy, you know, what, you know, this guy is not respecting the judicial system. And, it's something to respect, you know, and due to those things, I just got into a spiral. And that spiral, how do I deal with those things? Drink more. You know what I mean? You know, and it just didn't, it wasn't good. Like, and, you know, I was moving around, like moved to Atlanta for a little bit. I was trying to just find myself again. And it got to a point where, long story short, where it's like, okay, enough is enough. I'm built different than this. Mm-hmm. I can't live my life like this. It's been 2.5 years at this point. So that was like 14. So 14 to 15, 16, and by 16, I'm like, okay, Columbus, we gotta, if you really want to change, you have to start with yourself, you know, trying to go and produce a movie or produce a television show. How can you do that if you can't produce your life? So the first step for me was produce my life. And that was start doing the ugly work on myself.
You know, in the first chapter of your book, you make a very profound statement where you describe your marriage by saying, I couldn't let this toxic relationship go. I was more comfortable in toxicity than I could be with peace. It's an interesting thing because it's, you know, I think of this statement and it seems to sum up the core issue of many relationships. You know, I mean, and not just for you, but I think there's so many people that you get tied into this. In fact, I think you also mentioned that, you know, you kind of liken it to a dog you met in Puerto Rico or something. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, I talk about that dog because the dog was a stray, you know, jungle dog, right?
Yeah.
We, you know, one of my co-stars, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, love him. The dog was hanging around base camp every day and he took him home and it was raining the first night he took him home. Jeffrey went to the pet store, bought him a beautiful bed and warm food and there's a fireplace going and he put the dog in, you know, on the bed by the fireplace. And when he came out to the living room, the dog was outside sleeping in the rain. And it just goes to show, like, cause that was what the dog was comfortable with. And, I think a lot of people do that. And I'm going to be the first to say, if you're in a toxic relationship, you know, I was pre-warned too, you know, by people that were close to me, get out. And I don't know what, you know, for whatever reason, people have fear of leaving and what's on the other side. You know what I mean? And that's both men and both women, right? Mm-hmm. You're in a domestically violent relationship, or a verbally violent, abusive, or just a relationship that is not healthy for your mental. Got to get out. You know, some people stay for kids. Some people stay for financial security. Some people stay for a myriad of reasons, but loyalty. But at what cost is my thing. You know what I mean? At what cost? Fortunately, I was able to bounce back, and here we are talking about it now.
Right. You know, one of the things, perfect timing for me to have a plane going over. one of the things that that you talk about in the book is you go into your childhood, and we work with a lot of young people who had a very difficult childhood. You know, they had things that were difficult, and they were struggling to make decisions that may not have been the best decisions, and they found themselves, in a situation they didn't like. Share a little bit about where you talk a little about your own early childhood, and when your mother stated that she was on the brink of putting you into a foster care system.
Oh yeah, that was a rough day. But yeah, you know, I think my mom was overwhelmed, and God bless her heart. You know, three boys, and you know, trying to make ends meet. You know, single mother in California. You know, away from her, the extended family, and with some failed relationships, and you know, I think it was a tough time, and I think at that time, you know, you don't realize the damage. I remember the stress. I remember that. Maybe those are the days that, as I've become an adult, whenever I felt that anxiety, it's that feeling, you know, that feeling that what I felt then. Those things are traumatic, right? And I've had, you know, a plethora of other traumatic experiences that went unaddressed as I grew, right? As I grew into an adult. So you end up going on this journey, and from a child, and you end up accruing all of these war wounds and lashes and minute injuries that turn into chronic injuries and scars that never really heal properly. And then you become an adult, and one day you're going to work, and you know that gash over your chest starts leaking through your dress shirt, right? Mm-hmm. You're like, what's going on? And it's all of those unaddressed issues that, you know, we don't deal with as in our youth. And I think it's important for families. I think it's one of the, what you were speaking to about men is us getting help, being vulnerable, right? Being able to sit down, go talk to somebody. And parents, when their children don't have, if you see your children going through a tough time, if you don't have the answers, you don't have to, because there's no guidebook to this thing. Get your kid with someone that can help them earlier, because you that could eliminate just sitting down with someone for an hour, or you know, in the right comfortable space for that child, could change drastically the trajectory of their lives.
Yeah, and if you can sort of tie together, because what I got from that was that maybe that experience with your mother, which can create incredible abandonment issues.
Bingo.
And then from those abandonment issues, does that then tie into, okay, I can't get out of this toxic relationship because it's another form of abandonment.
Right.
You know, when you tie all of these things together, and like you said, if you leave them unattended, they're going to come out sometime later.
You just nailed it on the head. I think those abandonment issues started there. You know, also, if I speak to in the book, is watching my mom's failed marriages, right? And I felt like I didn't want to have that. I knew, I'm like, it can't be that difficult, but it is. Interpersonal relationships are tough, right? Marriage is tough. I don't care if the people are madly, madly in love, you know, or whatever the circumstances may be. So I think all of those things in that jambalaya was the reasons why, I stayed in situations I shouldn't have stayed in. And I think, you know, I was beating myself up for that for a long time. And then I just had to let it go. Like, you know, you made your mistake, learned valuable, valuable lessons at a high cost. Right. And I think part of me writing that book was three things. One was it was a cathartic process, a healing process, to address some of the misnomers that had been, that I didn't get a chance. I never got to defend myself, right? Johnny Depp's doing a wonderful job doing that right now. I never got to address, here's what's facts, here's what's fiction. And also to help those that may be close to or in a situation or find themselves going into a situations that I was in and have the foresight that I didn't have because I've already been through it. Let me have carried that cross for them so that they don't make the same mistake.
All right. We are talking with Columbus Short. We're talking about his new book, Short Stories, the autobiography of Columbus Short. Now, we're going to take a break, but when we come back, Columbus, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your early start in music. And I mentioned a little bit about what you did for Britney Spears tour, but let's talk a little bit about the music that led you into eventually the acting. So for everybody out there, stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. We are speaking with Columbus Short, and when we went to break, I mentioned a little bit in regards to his start as it related to music, and part of that I know involved Britney Spears. So, Columbus, the Britney Spears experience to those of us out here at that time, it looked like Hollywood stress on steroids in so many ways. What was your big takeaway from working with her at that time?
Well, I was a musician. I was a musical theater major. So coming from stage, all the skill sets necessary, even though I was young, I had to be in the position that I was in as a choreographer, as a creative director. Me and my partner, we were producing music for years. So that kind of that we were just right in the right pocket at the right time. We were just young. We were a bit ahead of our age and position. But working with her, the actual loved working with her. Britney was, she's special. She's a special person, special talent. But I saw, and this was me on the outside, like I wasn't Columbus Short. I was just Columbus, right? Seeing the pressure, seeing the, the schedule, seeing the unrelenting onslaught from media and paparazzi and press. It's just, I wouldn't wish that on my worst enemy. It was like, is this what it's all worth to be the pop princess or to be one of the biggest stars in the world? Is this what it's all worth, really? And to see the struggle, right? I would liken it to her being like a person in a crowded room, but nobody's listening to her. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You're in a packed room, but nobody can hear you. And so I would always try to hear her. So it was a really great early insight and kind of foreboding to be in that situation at that age with her.
Now, there's a lot of stories, obviously, people that read the tabloids and stuff like that, that there are lots of people in the industry that may not necessarily be a great influence, But let's focus a little bit on the people that were a positive influence in your life. So of all the people that you work with, who would you say was the greatest positive influence in your life, and in what way?
I've been fortunate to have many great mentors. The earliest was my teacher, Stevie Meredith. She was amazing. And she was my drama teacher in high school, but became, you know, more than that, kind of like a manager, a career guide, the Oracle, I call her. It doesn't matter, you know, even to this day, I call her for career, you know, she was just been there for career advice. Very wise, wise, wise woman, and kind of looks like the Oracle from Matrix. And speaking for the, you know, in the Matrix family, Lawrence Fishburne. He was literally my Morpheus, man. I call him Uncle Fish. He was the first man that I respected already from years long before I even met him. He was Morpheus, for crying out loud. Took me in and really was grooming me. To be the leading man, to be that next leading man, and what I was going to face being a Black young man in a not predominantly Black business, Hollywood, right? And so I thank him to this day. I think he probably was the one in the game that I much, much needed. I think I let him down back there, but you know, we're cleaning that up now.
Hey. That's the way we started the show is that, hey, if there's anybody out there that says that they haven't made a mistake, you're either lying to us or lying to yourself.
Correct.
So, we have some questions that have come in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time to send in questions, either call in or email in. This one reads, it says, I'm a fan of the series Scandal, and out of curiosity, I ordered your book after reading the summary on Alan's site. I'm not sure what I expected to read, but I could not put the book down until it was finished. I have already purchased copies for my son and daughter, and then in parentheses, it says ages 18 and 24, not because of the celebrity angle, but because of the pearls away from the star illusions, and because it's filled with real life experiences that truly it touched my heart. I know your book is going to have a lasting impact on anyone who reads it. And this is from Valerie in Arizona.
Valerie, Arizona. And I have some Arizona roots too. So what was the question?
Well, actually, no, I think hers is just a comment. She is just commenting.
Thank you, Valerie, for getting the book, and thank you for sharing it with your kids. And that comment touches me because that's the purpose of me writing the book. And to be honest with you, I had about 3 months of like super anxiety between the time I knew we had a release date and I knew it was coming up. I was kind of freaking out as like, man, I kind of put myself on the out there and I to the yeah. wolves, they're gonna, you know, and I didn't know how it was gonna be received. And it's comments like that make it worth it, you know, because I had to brave some of my natural fears, you know, and rise up out of that complacency to get here. And so to get that comment, that's amazing. Thank you, Valerie.
All right. And actually, we have another question, and this is another comment, but that follows with a question, and it touches on fears. It's years ago, I rented the original and the sequel and arranged an afternoon at the movies, it's in quotes, with my friends. Between the two movies, I read a few excerpts from your book, and everyone left wanting copy for themselves. Columbus, my father left us when I was three. And life was a day-to-day struggle to survive for my mother, my sister, and me. I know I speak for so many when I say we are grateful for your courage to write this book. After all the ups and downs life has thrown each of us, it is finding compassion for others and peace inside ourselves that we need to teach each other to live by example. My question is, how did you fight through your own fears to get through this and then take the risk of actually sharing this with all of us?
That's a great question. Sorry to hear about those, the father leaving those, that's, it's never tough. And I think to speak to that really quickly, there's a generation, and I mean, if we really just spoke as, you know, it doesn't matter whether you're Black, because I don't know if she's Black, white, Asian, Hispanic, whatever, you know, family traumas are, it's like, that crosses all color lines. And if we could really bond on that for a minute, you know, homes without a mother and a father are, you know, both parents in the home, it's tough. It's tough. So many single mothers, and I just want to applaud all the single mothers out there raising, you know, kids, whether it be one or multiple. It is a tough job, tough job, and to provide and to be the mother, be the father, tough. How I navigated through it, you know, I liken it to a plane. When a plane takes off, are they, you know, they're cruising at an altitude of whatever, 25,000 feet. And maybe at 25,000 feet, they get in some really rough weather, right? Some really rough patch of weather, thunder, lightning, planes shaking like crazy. And what does the pilot do? They have option. They can speed up the plane to try to push through, or they elevate to try to elevate above that weather.
Right.
And I think that was my work ethic. That was me trying to, everything I did in my life was from, you know, if you read the book, you know, I was in a toxic situation in high school at home. And what did I do? I wanted to elevate. I needed to get out of this weather. And so I ran to, you know, join Stomp. And, you know, when things got a little hectic again, it's like, there's gotta be better air up there. And I elevated a little more. I've always pushed through the fear, pushed through the, you know, leaped into the proverbial void, because there is no guarantee. I wasn't promised, wasn't written. I didn't read some prophetic word that says, Columbus, you're going to be this, you're going to be that if you do this. No, I just leaped into the void. And I think, that's when the blessings come unexpectedly. When you have faith in yourself, have faith in a higher power, that it's always going to work out if you're doing the right things. That's how I pushed through. That's how I pushed through even writing this book. There was stuff I didn't want to talk about anymore, stuff I didn't want to deal with anymore. I'm like, you know, I don't want to open this back up. And I had to take pause. You know, when I was working with the editor, a few times we were like, I didn't want to talk for 2 weeks. And then I was like, you know what? We're almost here. Let me finish this. And if it touches one person, I've done my job. I've paid my debt because I owe it. I pray and believe that my journey, my struggles, my successes, and everything good, bad, and ugly wasn't for naught. If I can share it, it could be of help to somebody else. So that's what pushed me through. Knowing that I could help at least one person, that's enough motivation for me.
You know, I love your analogy with the airplane about elevating. There are so many things in it. It reminded me of something that goes way back for myself, but I used to race motorcycles professionally on the dirt. And I had a sticker on my gas tank that said, when in doubt, gas it. And the thought behind that is that when people start to panic, and if you're doing this and you're going you're going 100 miles an hour, you know, on dirt on a motorcycle, and there's a rock or a rut or something like that, if you slow down, if you try to brake, okay,
yeah,
you're going to flip and you're going to wipe out terribly. If you gas it and you get your front wheel up over that, your rear shock is going to take care of that, and you're going to make it through it.
But
I haven't thought about that in probably 30 years. And when you brought up the thing about the airplane, it made me think of it going, yeah, that makes sense. But it's just, when in doubt, elevate.
Yeah. Yeah. When in doubt, elevate.
Don't let them pull you down.
Yeah. It's the only way. And I'm going to tell you, like, there was moments where you're like, how do I get out of this funk? How do I get out of this? You know, what is, you know, and then it's the noise, you know, will I ever work again? Is it, you know, am I a blackballed? Am I this and not that? What do people think? What is this? And all of this noise. And one day I just said, shut up, you know, and quiet all of that noise. I had to eliminate a lot of the things that I was doing that was causing the chatter. Right. Once I did that, I could see a clear path. I could see the clouds starting to part. And once I saw that little crease, I broke for it.
Well, you just mentioned the thing about working. Tell us about what you have. What do you have in upcoming projects?
So it's been a journey. But so, you know, one of the things that I was doing besides writing this book was writing scripts. It's what I love to do. I talk about it in the book. I've learned from the best, Aaron Sorkin, if you guys know who he is, your listeners.
Well, I do.
He wrote arguably one of the best lines in cinema history. If you want the truth, you want the truth, but you can't handle the truth.
That's right.
Aaron and Shonda Rhimes, obviously Grey's and Scandal, mm-hmm. and How to Get Away with Murder. So I, you know, seeing them working under, you know, under their tutelage, I wanted to create. So I wrote, I've written a reboot to Stomp the Yard. I wrote a couple of biopics. I'm show running a series that for eight episodes I'm show running. Wrote five of the episodes, directing all eight episodes. I just finished one of my dream roles, just wrapped last week, playing Martin Luther King and Mahalia Jackson, the Remember Me Mahalia Jackson story, but it was great. I have a third installment of a franchise film, True to the Game, that's coming out in the fall. I start another movie in June. I just kind of rebooted my whole entire team, and I'm kind of really back. It's full steam ahead. It's been a lot of the work had to, I'll tell you this, the work had to start with me. And then there's a lot of work that had to be done internally, where it's rebuilding burnt bridges, kind of setting things straight. And that's a part of, I think anybody that, whether you've dealt with drugs, alcohol, or just been an a-hole, right? making amends with people is something people should really do. If you feel, when I wake up in the morning now, it's like, I don't have any beef with anybody, right? Maybe my ex-wife doesn't like me, but that's okay. But other than that, I don't have any interpersonal issues with anybody. And, you don't want to live your life walking around knowing you have those, right? You want to deal with them. And if it's not always promised or guaranteed that the person you asked for forgiveness will forgive you, but that's okay. As long as you do, in a sincere heart, make amends, and you're able to release that from yourself and move on with your life.
You mentioned in regards to a series, you said an eight. What is it about, and where is it going to be released? What network?
Oh yeah, so it's Barry Bonds' ex-wife. She came to me about a year and a half ago, and she's like, "I have this show idea. I've never written a show, but I have the show idea." And so she pitched me the show idea, and I said, "There's something here. Let me sit with it." And then it hit me. So it's a show about a Major League Baseball fiance who decides to take it upon herself to kill her fiance's, all of her husband's fiance's side chicks. So it's like Promising Young Woman meets Dexter. It's really, really smart, really interesting. And the network is Urban Flix. Urban Flix is a new streamer. And the reason I took the assignment was because I wanted to show my I was worth the salt, right? That I can produce a show. I can executive produce a show, write a show, direct a show, and deliver a show on time. That's quality. So I'm excited about that. We're going to start production in August. I'm really excited about this process. It's been a wonderful process. It's kept me busy. But it's also, adding that real executive producer show running credit to my resume.
I'm smiling because I'm wondering how much of this was everything that she was thinking about doing.
That's exactly what it is. that's exactly what it is.
I know.
It's stuff she never did, but
right.
Stuff she really thought about.
Yeah. She's like, I really want to do this, but I don't want to go to jail.
Exactly.
So I'll write it instead.
That's exactly how I'm like, when she was telling me stories, I'm like, wait, did you really do this? She was like, no, but I wanted to. So I'm excited about her. I'm excited for her, and I've been working closely with her. Her daughter has been, her daughter's been working with us in the writer's room, and she's super smart too. And it's just, I'm excited for them to be, some new creators and television creators and producers in the game. So it's been a fun last year on that.
Well, I will be looking forward to that one, because as a huge baseball fan and a detective, I think you're going to tick many boxes for me.
Oh yes. It's you're going to love it. And we deal with sex trafficking. There's cartel. It's all of that in there. It's a wild ride.
We may need to talk off the air about your technical advisor.
Yeah, maybe I might need to bring you on for real.
There you go. All right. One of the things that I do from time to time with the show, and I call it it's the magic wand moment. So if I could hand you the magic wand, pass it right through the airwaves, and you could change something and change it for the better, not necessarily going back, but from right now moving forward, what would you do with that magic wand?
Right now, to be honest with you, there's so many things that I could say, right? It's like, end gun violence, end police reform. But really, it's like, I just want to end racism. Like, it's so stupid. Right now, I just say, like, can we just end it already? Like, color of our skin. It's like, how long are we going to carry these ancient archaic ways of thinking? It doesn't matter the color of your skin. It doesn't matter your gender. There's incredibly amazing people that bleed the same. If we just dropped this BS and really got to know one another, I think the world would be a completely different place. So I think that's the one right now. It's heavy on my heart.
Absolutely. And I'm right there with you. And one of the things that I tell people when people ask questions about this area, and I've traveled all over the world, and I say, if you're going to end racism, you're going to have to focus on the fact that you need to stop supporting those people that benefit from it.
Correct.
Okay. And it is people of all races, of all colors, of all backgrounds, of all religions. There are people that use things like this to their own benefit.
Right.
Okay? If you can not support them, you'll realize that the majority of us are not supporting it.
Right.
And we are not focused on those things, but people need to constantly draw attention to it if it benefits them.
It's so true. And I think if people looked at it like this, Reagan said it, but he didn't really hit it, but he said it. It's like, I think us as humans are earthlings, Homo sapiens are the most unevolved in the cosmos, right? I think we're being forced to evolve. And I might sound a little crazy, but I think we're being forced to evolve, but we're still in this that we haven't pushed through. And I think once we push through, we would evolve technologically. We would evolve, in all aspects, right? Ray said too, is it going to have an alien race to come down for us to realize that we are human race, that we are one race? Because if we're getting attacked from all sides, from creatures from another planet, then we'll realize, oh wow, we're all human. We need to fight. We need to stand together. It's like, come on, guys, let's not wait for Independence Day, the movie.
I absolutely. And it's interesting that you brought that up, because I was at a masterclass retreat this weekend, which was a wonderful experience. But one of the people brought up about, they were talking, doing something in regards to aliens and stuff. And somebody mentioned something about it. And I said, they said, well, I'm not sure if they've actually been here. And somebody else said, well, no, I think that they actually have. And I said, yeah. And I said, when they got here, what they said is, you know what? They're not evolved enough for us to even deal with them.
Exactly.
Let's come back in 1,000 years when they're a little more evolved.
Right.
So yes, I agree with you. Is that, you know, there's so many things being held back. But again, I want people to think about the fact somebody's profiting from it. Okay. Right. Okay. Those are the ones that are pushing it through.
Yeah. So, well said.
Fight that. And the other thing is
that, oh, and by the way, I went to Universal yesterday with my son, and I do have a Harry Potter wand.
You have a wand.
Let's put that into. Let's put that
into. Okay. Okay. So everybody, he's even got the wand. Okay. So focus on it. Okay. We are all going to take a step forward. You know, it's like kindness. Okay. All you have to do is go out today and be kind to somebody, and they're going to pay it forward. So yeah. And you can do the same thing on so many different levels to make a positive difference.
Yep. Yep.
So we've just got about another minute. I'd like you just to share a message that you would like to give for young people, because for those adults, and I say like teenagers, for those parents that are listening, I get quite a few of them that send in messages that say, oh my God, I love that message. And then I went and listened to the show again with my 15-year-old son or with my 14-year-old daughter because I loved that message. And it's something that I have tried to do all of my life, and that is we're going to make the biggest difference that we can when we get our messages out to the generation coming up now.
Okay, I have a message. And please. You know, I'm going to be doing a lot of speaking this summer. Or this next month, actually, I'm doing a few college universities, doing some commencement speaking. And this is what I'll say to you guys. The man in the arena, it's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The critic belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes up short again and again, but there is no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, and who at best, in the end, the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. And that's a Teddy Roosevelt quote. And I challenge all the young people to dare greatly. Go for the moon. Don't shoot for space, and you're going to land on a star. You know what I mean? And dare greatly. Don't worry about what anybody else is doing and what people are going to say. Don't worry about if somebody says, you'll never be that. Look where you're from. Look who your mom is. Look what your dad is. You'll never be that. It's never too late. I don't care how you start. It's how you finish. I don't care if you've been in juvenile detention facilities 15 times. This time, you're not going back if you decide. I don't care if you've flunked out of every class and it's looking like you'll never get in college. Choose today to turn that around and do the work to change your life. It's never too late as long as you got breath in your lungs.
Columbus, beautifully said. Thank you so much. I'm inspired. I believe that many other people listening and watching are inspired. Stay in touch. Keep up the good work.
I'm going to reach out to you.
I was going to say, I think we have some other subjects to talk about too. Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
All right. You're welcome. And for everybody out there, please join us next Monday when we are joined by J.W. Wilson to discuss his new book, Cracking the Learning Code. And in this interview, J.W. will share how the learning code facilitates astounding advances in one's speed of learning, depth of understanding, and duration of retention. This is not a new quick study gimmick or technique. It's our biological birthright. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.com. I'm sorry, at answers.network. And subscribe to our show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, or whatever platform that you listen to us through. And if you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people. And I want you to know we greatly appreciate it. And for everybody out there, remember, be good human beings. Do something kind for someone else today. And be with us again next week on Answers Network.
You You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.